was a cool prayer, wasn't it? Now, just so you know, it took Bruce a little while to get to the point of praying that prayer. Many will question the validity of using a movie like Bruce Almighty as a backdrop for a sermon series. But you guys know I sometimes tend to push the envelope a little bit. But to get to the point of praying that prayer, Bruce had to learn some lessons. He had to learn some hard lessons. And, well, we're going to spend the next 7 weeks, talking about the concept of teach us to pray. And I'm going to give you a 3-for-1 deal. Everybody likes a bargain, right? So let me just tell you how these sermons are going to work. Each week we're going to have a little lesson from Bruce as far as him learning how to establish a prayer life. Then we're going to have a big lesson from Jesus about how he taught a prayer life. And then, well, then we're going to have a little homework, an application that you're going to have to take home during the week and do for yourself to teach you how to establish a prayer life. And the good news, I'm going to give you 3, and I'm only going to charge you for 1. Isn't that a bargain? So it's like buy 1, get 2 free. Where else can you get that deal? But we are going to be talking about teach us to pray. And that statement comes directly from Luke chapter 11, verse 1. And it reads, one day Jesus was praying in a certain place. When he finished, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray as John taught his disciples to pray. So this is one of those moments that they saw that what was going on, and they saw Jesus praying, and they thought they were missing out on the deal, and they came up to Jesus and they said, you know what? John taught his disciples to pray. It was important to John. As a matter of fact, John's ministry was sort of known for prayer. This is what it says in Luke chapter 5, verse 33. They said to him, John's disciples often fast and pray, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours go on eating and drinking. So at one point in the ministry, they looked at Jesus' disciples, and Jesus' disciples didn't pray very much. It seemed like they were busy doing other things, and so now they see Jesus praying, and they see John praying, and they see John's disciples praying, and they come to Jesus, and they say, hey, Jesus, we want in on the action. Teach us to pray. Now, this is a really odd request by the disciples, because every single one of those disciples were from a Jewish background. You know what that meant, right? That means prayer was already a part of their life. As a matter of fact, when you go into Acts, and even after they were establishing the church, it says at the time of prayer, John and Peter went to the temple. There were stated times of prayer in the Jewish rituals that you were supposed to stop your life, whatever you were doing. That time of day, you stopped what you were doing, and you set aside time to say a prayer to God. It was part of their religion. So by coming to the Jesus saying, teach us to pray, then you get it. Notice they're saying this, John taught his disciples to pray. So they were looking at how they were taught to pray, the mere stating of prayer, the setting aside of a time to say certain words, to read a scripture or read a psalm. They looked at that, and they looked at what John was doing with his disciples and said, wait a minute. What I'm doing isn't equal to what John is doing. What I've been taught all of my life about what prayer is not what John's disciples are doing. They're doing something that, I'm looking for more than just a ritual. I'm looking for more than a time that I can come into this world and I can stop my day and just say something that I read out of a book, or say something that I read out of a passage, or just say the blessing for the dinner, or say, say that my prayers before I go to bed so that I make sure I wake up in the morning. I'm looking for more than just a ritual. I made the comment, I do hope by the time we get to the end of this prayer series that the only thing that we get out of this prayer series is a new set of banners behind me. Because that wasn't the point. We're looking for more than a ritual. They saw something that in John's disciples that made a difference, and they wanted in on the action. They saw what Jesus was doing, and they saw what John was doing, and they said, prayer is making a difference in their life, and you know what? Teach us, Jesus, to pray like that. See, they use that word teach. Now, the teachers in the room will be happy to know I actually know what a teacher is. To teach is to show or explain to someone how to do something. So they go to Jesus and they say, show us how to pray, explain to us how to pray. And believe it or not, teaching can't be done with just one person. Teaching requires two people. It requires a teacher and it requires a student. You can be a great teacher, but if nobody wants to learn, you can't teach them. Okay? So here's the deal. I can write great sermons. We can go here and we can look up all the scriptures in prayer. We can do all the things in the Bible prayer. We can go and study all the prayer warriors in the Bible. If we're not interested in praying, then you know what? They're going to be maybe good sermons, but I'm not going to teach you anything because you have to have a desire to actually do it. You can be a great student, so you can be willing to learn, but if nobody wants to instruct you, you can't learn. I can want to learn about prayer, but if there's nobody there that's willing to give me an honest picture of what prayer is, then you know what? I can never move beyond just God is great, God is good, let us thank him for our food, by his hands we must be fed. Thank you for my daily bread, amen, and let's eat because the food's getting cold. Okay, see, that's what we're trying to move away from. We're trying to move away from the idea of a ritual prayer, and so the teacher, there are two ways to teach. Now, I realize this branches off in many different areas. But when you boil teaching down, there are really two ways that you can teach. You can demonstrate. So that means you can do it with life lessons. You can do object lessons. You can put a visual out there. You can use a movie clip. You can put a to-do, an activity, a craft. There are all kind of demonstration things that you can do. You can demonstrate or you can explain. So you can lecture. So you can take a book on prayer. You can take a book on what's going on in people's lives, and you can read through it, and you can lecture them, and you can tell them all the things that you want them to learn. But to be the student, you have to have two important things. So in this model right now, I'm going to try to teach you about prayer, and you're the student, so I understand. I can demonstrate, and I can explain to you. But here's what you need. You need the ability to learn. Okay, if you don't have the ability to learn, if you can't understand what I'm saying, right now if you're here and you don't speak English, we would have a problem because it's the only language I can speak, and sometimes I don't speak that one so good. But you have to have the ability to learn from these lessons. But you also have to have the desire to learn. You have to come here this morning with a desire to say, I am looking for something that is missing from my life. I have a desire to bring something new. I am tired of my prayer life as the way it used to be. I want to change. You realize learning is all about changing, right? I mean, we don't usually learn something and then go home and store it away and say, well, I'm going to wait till I get invited to Alex Trebek's show and I'll use it on Trivial Pursuit. We learn something because guess what? We want to use it out in my life every single day. To learn something, you have to find value in it. You have to find it useful. And then you have to be willing to learn the information. And then guess what? You have to practice the skill. How many of us have ever learned something and then we say, okay, the teacher told me how to do it. I got it. Do you really have it? No, when do you have it? You have it when the teacher tells you how to do it and you understand it and you study it and you know it enough. And then you actually go out there and you do it yourself. When you actually put the lesson into work, that is when you have it. Just because you can answer the questions on the test doesn't mean you got it. That just means that you learned how to answer the questions on the test. I am not interested in giving you a prayer test. Well, actually, we'll give you a prayer test for just a little bit. But I am not interested in you being able to answer a bunch of questions about what prayer is. I am interested, by the end of this sermon series, you having a practiced prayer life that will change everything. That's the goal. So the first question we have to ask is, how important is prayer? And well, the correct church answer is very. If I was to put that question out there and ask you, everybody would say, yeah, prayer is important. But you do understand the definition of important. By the way, I love definitions. When we define things, that means we're all on the same page. And so when I say the word important, this is what I mean. Of great significance or value, likely to have a profound effect on the success, survival, or well-being. So that is What I mean when I say, is prayer important? Is it significant? Is there significance to your prayer life? If it's not, then guess what? It's not important. Is there value to your prayer life? In other words, when you come to your prayer life, do you see value in what you're doing when you pray? Or is it just the, well, I know it's meal time, and I know we're supposed to say prayer before we eat, so I'm going to quickly say prayer because you know what? It's what I'm supposed to do. I know I get to the end of the night, and since I was a little kid, they've always told me about bedtime prayers. It goes right along with my bedtime story. So you know what? I should say my bedtime prayers because it's what I'm supposed to do. But really, there's no value in what I'm doing. Do you see prayer as a time well spent because it has an effect on your success, survival, and well-being? Or is prayer just that thing you do because it's, well, that thing that you do? Let me ask about your prayer life in a different context. Since prayer is so tied to fasting, food, let's try this first little test. What do you miss more, a meal or a time of prayer? Oh, I don't miss very many meals. I don't, okay? As a matter of fact, I try to have 3 meals a day. Okay, I try to have 6 little small ones because when I try 3 meals a day, I eat too much food. So I try to do in little small portions and just kind of keep myself where I don't overeat. But you know what? If I miss a time of prayer, God understood, I'll pick it up. I mean, who's keeping score? I mean, it's not like God doesn't know what I wanted in my life anyway. I mean, he knows everything. If you miss a meal, your stomach starts growling and you realize it's gone. If you miss a time of prayer, does your spirit start growling and it's gone? Or is it just no big deal? Now, if that statement brings conviction to you, good. We're all in the same boat. We're headed down the right path. So what I'm going to do today is I am going to demonstrate the importance of prayer. And we're going to demonstrate by, we're going to take a quick walk and we're going to look at some people that we respect and say how important was prayer to them. And so the first person we're going to ask is, we're going to ask Jesus. Jesus, how important was prayer to you? And when I look at the demonstration, there are quite a little list here of things that you need to understand about Jesus' prayer life. Thing number one, Jesus prayed often. Luke chapter 5, verse 16. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. So the word often, this wasn't sometimes, this wasn't break glass when crisis comes. This wasn't, oh my gosh, I don't know what else to do. I'm out of all the other options. I guess I'll try prayer. When it came to prayer, Jesus prayed often. It was part of his daily routine of his life. It says Jesus prayed lengthy. One of those days when Jesus went out to the mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. That's a long time, depending on how you define the word night. I mean, we're not talking about Jesus had a 15-minute prayer or a 5-minute prayer. We're talking Jesus spent the night praying. I can honestly tell you, I have never spent the night praying for anything. I mean, if I make it 20 minutes, I've done really good. I mean, that's a long prayer time. But Jesus said, you know what? I needed a night to talk to God. Jesus instructed on prayer. Then he told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. So there was this one parable, and there was actually 5 parables that Jesus taught on prayer. That would make a good sermon series all in itself, just called the parables of prayer. We'd go look at the lessons that Jesus taught on prayer. We might pull a few of those in passing through this, but not this time around. We're just looking for the basics now. But Jesus thought prayer was important enough that when the disciples came and said, Jesus, teach us to pray, Jesus didn't say, well, you don't really need that. It's not that big of a deal. As a matter of fact, he taught more on prayer than he taught on anything else as far as when it came to one-on-one with the disciples. He was always telling them about what to pray for. He prayed in private. It said Jesus had a private prayer life very early in the morning. Okay, I could deal with the all-night thing more than I could deal with the very early in the morning, but that's okay. Very early in the morning while it was still dark, Jesus got up. There's the hard part right there, isn't it? Getting up. The alarm goes off and I want to hit the snooze because you know what? I can sleep 5 more minutes and pray later. Jesus got up and left the house, so he went somewhere else, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. So you get that Jesus had a purpose behind this. He wasn't getting up because he was late for work. He wasn't getting up because he had a list of to-dos. He got up for the specific purpose to get off by himself and pray. He prayed in public. It says, then the people brought little children to Jesus and placed, and he placed, try again. Then Jesus and the people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples rebuked them. So they were bringing the children out there to be prayed for, and the disciples said, why are you wasting the man's time? It's just prayer. And Jesus was like, no. Private prayer and public prayer go hand in hand. Matter of fact, if you're scared to pray in public, that might bring into question whether or not you really have a valid private prayer life. After all, praying is just talking to God. And that would be kind of like me saying I could talk to my wife when we're at my house, but you know, when we're out and about, I'm just too scared to talk to her when I'm out in the public. That's not how our relationship works, right? You understand Jesus' public prayer life was there because it was an extension of that private prayer life. The two pieces go hand in hand. Here's an interesting one. Jesus prayed for spiritual. Much more than you ever saw Jesus pray for physical, Jesus was about praying for the spiritual. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who believe in me through their message. So he had this idea of praying for those that were out there in the world and were going to believe, future Christians. Do you realize this? Maybe this should bring joy to your heart. Before you were ever born, 2,000 years ago, Jesus was praying for you. Because it says for those that will believe in the future. I want their message to be clear too. So Jesus' picture was more than just thank you for my food that I'm about to devour. His prayer was much bigger. So here's the question. How important was prayer to the apostles and the early church? Well, here is an interesting thing that maybe you didn't know. So if you're looking for your Alex Trebek trivia question, here's something that maybe you didn't know. The request to be taught prayer is the only specific lesson requested by the apostles. They never came to Jesus and said, Jesus, teach us how to heal. They had trouble with healing, and they had to get some lessons on healing, but they never asked for it. They never came to Jesus and said, teach us how to teach. You know what? They taught, and they had to be, but they never asked for that. They didn't say, teach us how to fellowship. Teach us how to get together. None of that was, but when they saw prayer, they said, now that's important. That I need to know. Jesus, teach me that. It's the only thing they ever asked Jesus specifically. Lord, teach me that. And then right off the bat, in Acts chapter 1, verse 14, this is what we read. They all joined together constantly in prayer, along with the women and Mary and the mother of Jesus, with his brothers. You know what the key word there is? Constantly. Right off the bat, the church is forming. And what is the foundation? What's the focal point of the church when it's forming? Prayer. And you know what? When we turn the page to those verses that we know oh so well, when we're talking in Acts chapter 2, verse 42, you know what? It's still going on. This is what it says. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to breaking of bread and to prayer. Right there in the list. It was important right there at the beginning. You know what? It was part of their worship. Now, I don't mean they had a time of prayer at their worship. Maybe they did. Maybe they had a time where they read people's illnesses and struggles and what have you. But it does say that they praised God in prayer. This is what it says. On their release, Peter and John went back to their own people and reported what the chief priests and elders said to them. When they heard this, they raised their voices together in prayer. How many times have we ever done this in church? I have been coming to church almost all my life. I have never heard a prayer raised together in unison from a congregation. How did they know the words? Did somebody write these things down before, or did they just all start raising their voices in unison, lifting praise to God? They raised their voices together in prayer to God. Sovereign Lord, they said, you made the heavens and the earth and the sea and everything in them. And moving on to verse 31, and after they prayed, the place where they were meeting was shaken. And they were filled with the Holy Spirit, and the word of God was spoken boldly. Wow. This sounds like it's more than just something that they did to get themselves ready for worship. This sounds like it was the worship. This sounds like the concept of prayer was sewn into the fabric of the church. See, prayer was a priority over ministry. This is what it says next, chapter 6, verses 3 through 4. Brothers and sisters, choose 7 men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will turn the responsibility over to them, and we will give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the word. So they were distributing food, and they had a ministry going on in the church, and some contention came up about the ministry, and they came to the apostles, and they said, hey, we don't think this ministry is running right. And the apostles said, find yourself some leadership to run this ministry, because our priority is the teaching of the word and prayer. So that means they ranked prayer ahead of the basic ministry that we see in the church of meeting people's needs. Wow. That sounds like it's pretty high up there, isn't it? That sounds like we're talking about some serious stuff when we talk about what the church thought about in prayer. As a matter of fact, it was serious. In Acts chapter 7, verse 59, Stephen is being stoned. He's down in a pit. People are throwing rocks at him. My inclination would be run. That would be a good move right there, right? Not Stephen's. Lord Jesus, receive my spirit. Then he fell on his knees and cried out, Lord, do not hold this sin against them. When he said this, he fell asleep. What was Stephen's last act as people were hurling rocks at him? Not run, not complain, not yell out insults at them. This man prayed for them. Wow. Really? I'm not that big of a person. Really, I'm not. But it was so sewn into the fabric of who the church was. You couldn't separate prayer from the church or church from the prayer. Now, I could keep going on and on and on. I could keep you here and let the chicken downstairs get cold. But let me just give you some statistics. Out of 28 chapters in the book of Acts, only 8 don't mention the church praying directly. 8. So that means the other 20 all talk about some point the church prayed. Out of the 8 that don't talk about it directly, 4 of those hit at the idea of the church praying. So they never said that the church actually prayed, but it talked about the idea that, you know what, the church got together and they got off by themselves and they went off to consider the matter. And then the idea is that we understand prayer was a part of it. So out of 28 books of Acts, which we count the history of the early church, only 4 of those don't talk about prayer. And by the way, those 4... Are the chapters of Acts that talk about the actual travels of the Apostle Paul. So we're not talking specifically about prayer because we're talking about locations and destinations. Anytime you saw the church as a group together, they were praying. Wow. So how would you rate the importance of prayer to the early church? I think I would say that's pretty daggone important. If everything that they do began, started, and involved prayer, then maybe there's something to this thing. If they saw enough value in it to say, Jesus, teach me, maybe there's something to this. Maybe if Jesus patterned his whole ministry with the idea of prayer woven through it, maybe we're missing something. Because here's what I want to know. How important is prayer to us? Now this gets very, very dicey here because now I'm going to start feeling guilty. Maybe. I don't know. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give us a case study. If you have your copy of the Bible, you can make your way to Acts chapter 12. We're going to eventually read verses 3 through 5 because this is the answer to the test. Now if you want to have the answer up front, go ahead. You can read it while I'm talking. That's fine. You won't offend me. But I'm going to give you a little test, and then we'll come back and read the story to see how we should handle it. Let's just say there's something going on that's really bothering the church. Maybe it can be a social issue, and there's something going on out in the world that the world is doing something that offends the church, and so the church is deeply disturbed about it. Maybe it's a relationship in the church that something is going on in the church, and it's just causing all kind of contention. I don't know what it is, but maybe there. I just want to, for a moment, wrap your head. There is something bothering the church. What should we do? Now, here's the good news. This is not a fill-in-the-blank test. I always hate fill-in-the-blank tests. I like multiple choice. So I'm going to give you some choices of what we can do, and then I'm going to let you decide what we should do. So choice number one, we can sit around and complain about how unfair the world is. You know, we can gather around tables, or we can gather in the sanctuary, or we can go sit at a restaurant, and we can moan and groan and complain about how the world is not the way it used to be, and how the world is a terrible, rotten, evil place, and we can talk all about the problems of the world, and we can do that as a church, and we can see how effective that is. So that's an option. We can preach a really strong sermon letting everybody know it was wrong. So it's wrong, and we should go to our minister, and the minister, we say, you know what, you should go through Scripture and look up all the verses that have to do with this problem, and you should put together an outline, and you should get up in the pulpit, and you should preach a sermon to tell everybody this is wrong. It's an option, okay? We could create a petition, sign our names to it, and send it to our congressman or local official. That's a productive thing, right? That's our American right to have a petition. We could go out and get a petition, and you know how many petitions I've seen signed over the years for the lack of prayer in school? We'll talk about that in a minute. But we can do it, right? That's a good, productive thing to let our congressmen know we don't approve. And by the way, I might not vote for you next time. It's funny, they keep getting elected even though we say we're not going to vote for them anymore. We could stage a protest. There's a good idea! We could all go down to Michael's or Walmart or whatever the craft store of your choice, and we can all get pieces of poster board, and we can write catchy slogans on the poster board, and we can stand out on the street corner on a Saturday or even on a Sunday after church or maybe a weeknight, and we can get bullhorns, and we can chant, and we can hold up signs and posters telling everybody how wrong what you're doing is. Okay. We could send money. That's always helpful. Money solves everything. It makes the world go around. So we could find an organization that is dealing with this issue, and then we could put them on our mission list, and then we could send them some money, and then they get to take care of the issue, and then I don't have to feel guilty about it anymore. Okay? We could buy a t-shirt or a bumper sticker so that all the world will know that I don't approve. Yeah, that sounds good. We could all get matching uniforms. And we could all wear things on our shirt to say, you know what, this is wrong, or this is not right, or this needs to change, or I don't approve of this, or I don't approve of that law, or I don't think we should do this. We could do that, right? Or we could gather together as a body and pray for the situation. So now, let me ask you a question. What's the right answer? Well, you're all saying that, but how many times do we try A through F first? Let's see what the early church did when they were faced with this issue. When he saw this, this is Herod that's doing this, Herod saw that this met with the approval among the Jews, Herod proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of unleavened bread, and after arresting him, he put him in prison. So you understand, Peter's committed no crime. He's done nothing more wrong than going out and telling people about Jesus. And so now they've put one apostle to death, and now they've arrested another one, and they put him in jail. Talk about social injustice. Hand him over to be guarded by four squads of soldiers, four soldiers each. So they put 16 soldiers watching this one man. Man, that's a lot of soldiers. Herod intended to bring him for a public trial after Passover. So Peter was kept in prison, but the church, A, sat around and complained about it. B, preached a really strong sermon about it. C, created a petition and sent it to Herod to say you shouldn't have arrested Peter. D, staged a protest. E, sent money. F, bought t-shirts. Oh no, what did this church do? Silly old church. Don't they understand A through F works much better? Because you know what this church did? But the church was earnestly praying. And I'm not talking about that they were just like saying part of their prayers before they went to bed. Oh, no. This church stopped their life. And they gathered together publicly. And they gathered together at a house. And they began seeking God's face. And it says it went on and on and on. So here's my question to you as we begin this idea of Lord, teach us to pray. Don't die on me. Yeah, there you go. When did the correct answer stop being the correct answer? When did the idea that when there is a crisis in the church that we are to gather together as a body and get on our faces before God and pray for that situation, when did that, the correct answer, stop being our answer? Because I want to tell you, when that started, that is when the church began to have problems. The moment we began to stop seeing the correct answer as being prayer, but the correct answer being, go out into the world and complain about it. Go out into the world and sign petitions about it. Go out into the world and do this. The moment we started doing that and we left God out of it, then you understand, we unplugged the power. You know what? They didn't take prayer out of schools. We did. We, the church, we took prayer out of schools. Because we've complained about it for all these years. How many times have we gathered out in front of a school and prayed for it? Let me tell you, zero. It's not part of our regular life. We will complain about it, but what are we willing to do about it? We want to put prayer back in school? Then maybe it's time to start praying for the schools. You want to put prayer back in our society? Maybe it's time to start praying for our society. The correct answer when everybody says G has to be the correct answer with what I do with my life. Could it be that after all this time, we really don't choose prayer because we're not taught how important it is? We don't see it as significant. We don't see that it adds value to my life. We don't see it that it really has any major impact on the significance of my success, of my well-being, of my survival. It's not that important. It's just that thing we do because it's that thing we've been taught we're supposed to do. And I'm not here to teach you you're supposed to pray. I'm not. We're going to take a look at the Lord's Prayer and we're going to break it down. I'm going to teach you how to pray. But I sent out my email this week and it said, but before I can teach you to pray, I first must teach you to pray. Before I can teach you the mechanics, I've got to give you the desire. See, well, you now know what that is. The question is, what are you going to do about it? You now know it's important. Remember I told you my sermon was broken up in three parts? Here comes the homework. Each week we're going to end our sermon with a prayer challenge. Now, when I broke this one up, at first I called it Shut Up and Pray, but I thought that sounded a little brash. And then after the well got here and we were centered, I thought this would be a really good thing to take it to the well. So I want you to think about this. People come in and they have prayer requests that they want read out. And I understand. You have things you want us to pray about. Don't hand them to me anymore. Take it to the well. Notice our little bucket has a nice little slot cut in it. That's how you can put your prayer request in it. But as you're placing it in the well, I don't want you to drop the cart and run. I want you to do exactly what Morgan Freeman said. I want you to pray for it. I want you to stop your life and take time to say, God, this is important to me, so I'm putting it in here. Because once you think about the sermon series we just finished, who was at the well waiting for the woman? Oh, please tell me you know the answer. Jesus. You understand that's who you're looking for. You come in with a prayer request. You're not looking for the minister, because I hate to tell you this. I don't have a bat phone in my office. Okay, I don't have one of those red phones where I pick up the receiver and I push the button and God says, Barry, I've been waiting for your phone call. Understand, my prayers work the same as yours. Now, I want you to know, I want you to, if you have a prayer request, something comes up during the week, send it to me. We're still going to send out the emails. We're going to empty the bucket every week, and we're going to put that out in the emails just like we do now. But the only difference is going to be, is I'm not reading for the next, at least for this sermon series, I'm not reading another prayer request from the pulpit. We'll get them out in the prayer list when we do it in email and when we put it out that way. But I'm not doing another prayer request from the pulpit. What I want you to do is I want you to pray for it yourself. I want you to bring that request in on a written piece of paper. And if you don't have a piece of paper, guess what? We give you one in the bulletin. Oh, okay. So you can pull that out of the bulletin. You can write your prayer request on it. If you don't want me to put it in on the email list, and you just check confidential, and I promise you, nobody else, for the confidential ones in this exercise, I won't even share those unless you say share with elders. I will pray for them. But I want you to put them in the bucket, and I want you to pray for them yourself. I'm even willing to go this far. This back door, I'm here from, with the exception of the week I have to go to Dayton, I'm here for every single day from around 8:30-ish to around 5 o'clock. That door is going to be open. Okay, I got a camera. I'll be able to see you come in. But don't come in the door looking for me. If you've got something that you need to pray for, come to the well. Bring it on up here. We say, well, that means I got to come here to pray. Well, no, you don't have to come here, but you understand what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to give you a concept. I'm trying to teach you to pray by giving you a place to come and pray. We will be here on Sunday mornings, 9:15 to 9:30. Those doors will be shut. That door will be shut. We're going to gather around this well, and we're going to pray. Now, if you don't want to pray out loud, you can still come. You're not going to make anybody pray out loud that doesn't want to, but you can still come and participate. We are going to pray around this well and for whatever goes in that bucket as a church collectively. And that's going to be for the better part of all of the sermon series, all the way to the middle of March. Because here's the deal. I don't want to just teach you how to pray. I want to teach you to pray.